Hey, Anna, did you hear the big news from the planet Venus?
Why don't you tell me and I can make sure it's the same news I heard.
Venus could have life on it. Is that exciting or what? Yeah, that was the big news that came out last month where scientists have found this element, this chemical element that's in the atmosphere of Venus that they say could only come from life forms.
How do they know?
Well, they're smart people. I mean, they've been studying this a while. Yeah, they've been working with this stuff. But they've got this new data from the cloud tops of Venus. Mm-hmm. And it's very exciting. It's swept all around the internet. And people are saying, oh, my gosh, Venus has aliens on it. Venus has aliens. What do you think? What do you think of this news?
I think that I didn't think it was going to be Venus.
I know.
Venus? Yeah, why Venus? And I'm into it, but also I feel like we're very, it's really, bold of us to assume we're alone.
Definitely. That is absolutely true. That, thinking about us as being the only place around, I don't know. But Venus, well, before you get too excited, I'm going to do my usual and bring you back down to Earth.
It's like a bring up and then it's like a bring down.
Yeah.
What's the bring down?
I'm not ready to go start collecting alien creatures from Venus just yet, but we'll talk more. From our home studios and Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. We're staying socially distanced, but excited to welcome Dr. Mark Kushner from NASA to talk about some of their great citizen scientist programs. So, Dean, you're not ready to pack your bags for Venus just yet.
Yeah, this is one of those headlines that got people's attention. It was one of those things.
It's clickbait.
It was. It was totally. And even New York Times fell for it. Everybody fell for it.
Oh,
I mean, it was
no.
Like. They're like, scientists find life on Venus. Basically, that's what the headline was, which was, of course, even I clicked on that. I mean, I was like, sure, all right, life on Venus. Tell me more. And then you dive in past the first paragraph, and then they say, well, okay, scientists found this element or this compound called phosphine that's in the atmosphere of Venus. And on Earth, the only way you can make that compound is it's made by creatures. It's made by life forms. And so
creatures.
I don't know. What's the technical term? I'm not a biologist.
Creatures.
Why we refer to us as humans? So, I'm kind of being as general as possible.
Yeah, you're like, it could be anybody at this point making it. Okay.
Organisms. All right, fine.
Sure. Well, organisms is a good science word.
Anna, you and your fancy science term here.
That's right. I'm such a stickler for science terms.
It's made by organisms on Earth. And so that's the only possible way we can make it. So if we're finding this this compound here in Venus, well, then what's making it?
Mm-hmm.
Creatures.
That's organisms? I'm trying to use the word again.
Organisms. That's right.
How far is Venus? Well, okay. So you think that that's not necessarily... this is like an SAT question.
Yes. It's like...
Only organisms can make whatever the fancy word was. On Venus, there is...
Phosphine.
What is it again?
Yeah, phosphine. Okay. So phosphine. Is there...
So ergo, there's living... That's an SAT question. I just solved it.
That's perfect. And so by your logic,
I've always been good at standardized tests.
Therefore, there's life on Venus.
Yeah.
But hold on, let's wait a second. Just because we see this doesn't necessarily mean that's the only possible way that it's going to happen. And so about paragraph 3 in all the articles, I mean, everyone is the same one. It's like, scientists find this thing that could only come from life. And then paragraph 3 is like, but hold on a second. Maybe this is from some natural process, some geologic process. Just because on Earth that's how it's made doesn't mean that's not how it's made anywhere else.
And
out of all of the places in the solar system, Venus is the most inhospitable place for life on its surface. That's for
sure.
That was
my question. Like, how likely did you think that it would be Venus?
Well, yeah, I mean, Mars would be number one, I would think. Mercury would probably be even better than Venus, because Venus's surface is not conducive for us. That's for sure. I mean, okay, it's 900 degrees on the surface, 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Its pressure is so extensive that it would squish you flat. And then, it, you know, rains acid. It is not a good place. You would die basically instantly. And yeah, some of our...
It sounds hellish.
It is. And if you want to see a fun video, some of our educators made on the Cincinnati Observatory YouTube account, we did a Three Ways to Die on Venus real fast, which is a crowd pleaser. But anyway, it's...
Way to plug the YouTube very
well,
subtly.
Well, yeah, you got to put that in there. Yeah.
Come on, go to our YouTube, everybody. You're going to love it.
They do good work.
They do good work.
But what this is hinting at is that a little intriguing twist is that maybe we're not talking creatures, organisms living on the surface of Venus. Maybe they are populating the atmosphere, the cloud tops. They are floating organisms that exist at a certain level above the ground. Because if you were above the surface of Venus, you could dwell and live in a nice little comfortable zone. Like if you're 50 miles up, it'll be a nice pleasant 70 degrees. But you just have to be 50 miles up.
50 miles off the surface of Venus. Would I have also cleared the acid rain or whatever it is?
Yeah, you'll be over that. Well, you probably want to stay inside a lot still. But I mean, it's probably not the... You probably want to stay indoors. But it's kind of like Cloud City in the Star Wars trilogies. You know, that's a city that you could make a city that's living up there. And so could there be some kind of organisms that could live in an atmosphere and survive? And it's possible, but it seems really unlikely. But it gets your minds going. And so the vast majority of the scientists are saying, well, hold on. We're not saying we found life. We said we found this compound. But you know how people want to find out I found aliens.
Yeah, people are excited and you're crushing their excitement.
I always love to crush their excitement because I've seen this, because I've gone through this before, Anna. We've had this with Mars.
Let them have a moment.
I know. And so back when I was young and impressionable, and there was an article about a compound found on Mars, and it was the exact same thing that said, this can only be formed by organisms. It's the only way you can get this. And we found it on Mars. And then 6 months later, they said, we figured out there's a geologic process behind this.
How long? Let's say I want to keep my options open, okay? I heard your Mars story, blah, blah, blah. What if I'm optimistic about this Venus thing? How long does it take me? I hop in my Subaru, I head to Venus. How long are we talking?
Well, it's going to take a while. Driving, you're not going to make it. Sorry, your Subaru's not going to make it. But,
okay, I get in a spaceship. God, you're so technical. I get in a spaceship. How long are we talking?
I'm still trying to get over. You glossed over my Mars tragedy where I opened myself up to the possibility of aliens. And then I was crushed when they was like, no, it's not aliens. But anyway.
Well, it could be. This could be aliens. You're just like being negative. You know, Dean, it's okay to get hopeful again, even when you've been disappointed by life.
That's true.
And, you know, by the universe.
That's a good point.
And by this entire year of 2020.
It's a good point. You're right. I should look. I should keep looking up. You're right. All right.
Yeah,
so let's say we want to go to Venus. Yeah, it would take you. It's at closest approach to Earth. It's still about 26 million miles away. So
I'm not really good on long trips.
Yeah, fast travel time would get you there in 5 months or so, something like that. So it's not exactly a quick trip. And then again, if you're going to go visit in person, you better stay 50 miles above the surface if you want to live a few seconds. And so that's the place where we'd want to study. But you never know. You're right. You've turned me around on this. I'm going to keep hope alive. I'm going to say, let's investigate and find this life on Venus. But think about that. What would a cloud-based atmospheric organism? I mean, that is the fun part to think about, is who knows what aliens are going to look like.
Right. I bet they're adorable. Living
in
the clouds.
Either way. Oh, really? I've seen a lot of movies that say they're not.
Oh my God. Can we agree on anything?
Not today.
Not today.
Not in 2020.
That's right.
So you've heard me talk about being a solar system ambassador, but there are lots of great citizen scientist programs at NASA, just like that one. And the man in charge of those is Dr. Mark Kushner. He's an astrophysicist based at the Goddard Space Flight Center. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about what is a citizen scientist and what does a citizen scientist do?
Great questions. A citizen scientist is a volunteer. It could be anybody. It could be you, could be me, could be anyone who wants to do some real science. I'm sorry, that was part of the question.
That's a good answer, though. It's like very simple. I like it.
We dive in very fast here, so it's
I think we're done then. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that was it. That takes care of it. Yeah. Check that box.
You know, I think one thing I want to emphasize, though, is that that word citizen is I don't know if we need it anymore. You don't have to be a citizen of anything. The notion, though, was to I think the original use of that word was to highlight that it's, you doesn't have to be professional scientists. It's people who are interested in the science that's around them and the science that they can do. And you don't have to be a citizen of any country in particular.
Yeah, I think it was more, the way I look at it is more of a, you know, there's NASA and then there's everybody else. Like, so NASA is up really high. And so it's intimidating to say, well, can we actually help NASA do things? And I think that's what the whole goal is it's for everybody. And so that's the way I read the word citizen. So I think that's really cool.
There's some days when I'm intimidated by that prospect too. Can I do anything to help NASA? Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, so we understand that you work with citizen scientists on several different projects. Can you tell us maybe about one or two projects that you're working on right now?
So I'm working right now on a couple of projects that have been going on for several years. One of them is Disk Detective, which just relaunched, and another is Backyard Worlds Planet 9. And both of these projects begin with data from NASA's WISE mission, which imaged the entire sky in the infrared, so 2 billion sources. It's really a massive data problem. And professional scientists, of course, have been scouring this data, looking for galaxies, new disks where planets form, brown dwarfs, interesting kinds of stars, asteroids that are near the Earth. It's been a fountain of science, but it's still too big to really comprehend without help. So in both of these projects, we've processed the data in different ways and put it online and asked for help from the public to go through it and understand it.
So the one project I saw that NASA does that I'm most familiar with was Zooniverse. And that one was the one where you ask kind of people to look at galaxies. I mean, that's the thing. There's so much data, like you mentioned, so many galaxies out there. I always had a lot of fun doing Zooniverse. Was that one of the projects you helped out with also?
Zooniverse is a whole community of projects. And it recently started a new partnership with NASA, by the way. Zooniverse began with a project called Galaxy Zoo, which I think maybe is the one that you're referring to, which showed volunteers images of galaxies and asked them to help identify whether they're spirals or ellipticals or clusters or things like that. But since then, it grew into now a family of something like 100 projects spanning a range of different disciplines, including astrophysics, but also history, climate science, biology, medicine, all kinds of different things.
So it doesn't talk about sending animals into space? I thought Zooniverse, like zoo, universe, no. That's not what it is.
I think the zoo part is a reference to the wide variety of interesting scientific critters that you'll encounter.
Oh.
Yeah. So some of the critters are different kinds of galaxies, for example. Some of the projects are literally critters. So, for example, a NASA project on Zooniverse called Snapshot Wisconsin shows you images taken with automatic cameras that trigger when they see motion, and you'll see all kinds of deer, wolves, things that live in the wilds of Wisconsin. And we need human eyes on those images to help figure out what they are often.
That makes sense. That makes more. I just assumed it was like animals in space. That's my bad. I need to learn more about it as a citizen scientist.
What's your favorite topic in science? Maybe I can suggest a NASA project for you.
Oh my gosh. Anything with animals, really. Dogs. I love dogs. Really like, let's see, man, I mean.
This is really hurting. I mean, do you know what our podcast's about, Anna? Anna, you say dogs are your number one thing.
I'm a person. I'm not an astronomer. That's my shtick, Dean. I can be interested in whatever I want. Mark isn't judging me. He's saying, what do I like? I like dogs, Dean. I told you this.
I'm judging. It's all about stars.
You should know this.
I didn't think there was anything other than stars in the universe.
Just because you're a cat person. I mean, the truth is, he said science, didn't you, Mark? He said anything. So, I like animals. Sorry.
So, you like dogs. How about kelp?
I love kelp.
We have a great NASA project called Floating Forests that asks people to track the positions and movement of beds of kelp.
Really?
Which show us how their Earth's climate is changing. We have a project on, you'll like this one, penguins.
I do like penguins.
Penguins, a mapping application for penguin populations. You can find all of these projects at science.nasa.gov/citizenscience.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna like go look them up. Now I'm worried about the kelp, Mark. I gotta figure out where's the kelp going.
You gotta keep it on a leash.
That's right.
How about mosquitoes? We have mosquito habitat mapper.
Like you figure out where they're swarming?
You figure out where they're likely to live, and you take pictures of the larvae, and you check to see whether they're the kind of mosquito that's going to make you sick when it bites you.
Wow. That's interesting.
That's a life-saving project that we do.
That is life-saving.
And you use it to find out where mosquitoes are, and so you know where not to go?
Where not to be.
To avoid.
Well, you know, if you like things like dengue and tuberculosis and so on.
Anna, is that something you like too?
I like the project. I would prefer not to get dengue. No, thank you very much.
Couldn't we all? So,
that's right.
I'm sorry, not tuberculosis. Malaria.
Malaria, yeah. Also a no for me. Thank you, though. That's all that's important. That's some good stuff happening.
So I did have a question about the Backyard Worlds project and the Planet Nine thing. Is this kind of along the lines of looking for that elusive mythical planet that could be out there beyond Neptune and Pluto and beyond?
We're searching everything from Pluto out, really. For objects that move. We know very little about the outskirts of our solar system and the nearby stars and star-like objects that whiz by our solar system. So we are sensitive. We are the largest all-sky infrared search for Planet Nine. If there's a hypothesis that there is a planet beyond, there are a couple of hypotheses about about planets that orbit beyond Neptune that we could sense, and there is also a whole sea of objects called brown dwarfs, which resemble planets. Some people call certain brown dwarfs rogue planets that we are discovering at a fantastic rate. We've uncovered about 1,600 of these brown dwarfs so far, including some really wacky exotic ones that nobody expected.
So when you say planets beyond Neptune, good, there already is one. There's Pluto.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So I don't know if you mean
we
beyond
have a disagreement
Pluto.
Of opinion here on so you can break the tie on the Pluto debate. Are you you considering Pluto a planet in this, or what's your feelings on it?
I'm all ears.
Well, astronomers call it a dwarf planet these days, but I don't love it any less. It's still a fascinating object, and Pluto and the other dwarf planets and Kuiper belt objects out there in the outer solar system are likely the keys to understanding a lot of our history in terms of how and where the sun formed, what kinds of other stars it may have encountered in its past, and the origin of our planet.
That was diplomatic. That was really
well
good.
Put and
impressive.
Yeah. You felt all right about that, Anna?
Yeah, I mean, must we always put dwarf in front of it? It feels pejorative, I'm not going to lie, but fine. I just feel bad for it, okay? I'm a human being. I got compassion for dogs and Pluto, apparently. But good answer, Mark. I liked it. That's right. It's very important.
She's a sucker for little things. That's little dogs and little
so
worlds.
Cute.
That's what she likes.
Little
those
planets.
Well, swing by backyardworlds.org and help us discover more planets out there.
I like it.
Perfect. Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun talking about the citizen science projects, and really glad to have you join us here today for our podcast.
It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, major drama last episode or two about the flat earther who is trying to slide into the observatory's DMs and basically question your life's work, but also your own personal morality system that you're propagating this lie, quote unquote, about the Earth being round. Anyway, obviously we've all moved on, but what we really want to know, actually we've not moved on, we're going to do an update. So Dean, why don't you tell the people, tell the fans, tell the other round earthers what happened with this whole thing after we...
Yeah.
Talked about this.
Yeah, this was something a couple episodes ago. I kind of chronicled my approach to flat earthers that were claiming that the Earth was flat and that I was perpetuating some kind of lie and
how dare they
cover up either purposefully or just ignorantly about the Earth being round. And so my approach was not to ignore, but to overwhelm and troll back. So my approach was not just to send one picture of the round Earth or one explanation of why the Earth is round, but I ended up sending about 14 different arguments as to why the Earth was round, with links, with videos, with reasonings, and asking questions. I wanted him to answer the questions instead of him asking. Actually, I shouldn't say it, because they don't ask questions. They just demand things
and call
but
you bro.
I asked the questions such as, well, on a flat Earth, when the sun sets, where does it go? I think that's it seems like a pretty easy question to answer. And I sent them a link to a video built for children to explain how that works with the round Earth. He was not able to answer where the sun goes when it goes down at night on our flat Earth. He was also not able to answer any of the 14 questions that I asked. But so I thought, okay, this is going well. He's not answering back. He's reading it. I can tell he's reading it. He's looking at them.
Right.
And so I was
children's level videos.
Yeah, the children's level videos. And so I was about ready to end it and say, you know, because he wasn't giving me any responses back, when at the very last moment, he then came back and called me lots of names, called me a liar, called me a godless person. Called me a money grubbing person, that I was out this, that I was, this is, I was making this for money. I did then say that, the people that made the conspiracy videos were doing it for money. I work for a nonprofit. He wrote back and said, nonprofits are the worst kind of profitable businesses, because they're trying to milk people out of their money.
Yeah. That upset me too, as a nonprofit. I was like, excuse me, but it was so your fight. So I backed off.
So people for profit are a suspect. People non for profit are suspect, and volunteers are suspect. So there's nobody that avoids detection from him.
Nope.
So I basically I did say that I pray for him that he tries this stuff himself, that he looks up there to behold the creation that is out there, the universe that is out there, to look out and watch a sunset and explain this. He wrote back and said, I don't know who you're praying to, but you got to really think about who you're praying to because you need help. He's told me that. And then,
oh my God, you're getting so riled up. I wish we should not have brought this up.
So the final one, I was like, okay, I got to end this right now because this is over. And so I told him, I said, I want to thank you very much for this back and forth. I really appreciated this challenge to me. It made me rediscover all these reasons why the earth is round again by finding these things. And, you know, I gave you all the things. I answered all your questions. You didn't answer any of mine. I didn't change your mind. You didn't change my mind. But I'm thankful for this discussion. I will be forever thankful for you for doing this for me. I wish you well in the future, and I hope that you just get outside and enjoy God's creation that's out there and the wonders of the universe that are out there like I have, because it has opened my life and has opened my mind, and I hope that you will find that yourself someday. And that was it. And then I saw that he read it, and then I blocked him and banned him, and that was it.
I saw that he read it, and then I blocked him. Oh my God. So, are you serious? Did you really saw that it was like on red, and so you just like black?
I waited pretty, I didn't wait very much longer. I just like, yeah, you know, he got the message.
Oh that, my God. You got the last word. That is key.
That was the key. And so, I was kind of corresponding with another astronomer that works with this. And he warned me ahead of time. He said, Dean, just don't engage. Don't bother.
Feed the trolls.
Because he said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to send him all this information. He's not going to answer any of it. He's going to come up with even wilder conspiracy theories, and he's going to insult you. And
those things happened, didn't they?
That's what's so strange, is that it is so predictable, the interactions. It's like, and I've been told again and again, you can't talk logic where logic don't live. But I just I gotta try. And
it's admirable that you tried.
I don't know. So I'm not sure what I'm gonna do next time. I think I should lay down some ground rules to say, okay, if we're gonna correspond, you have to answer my questions. Like if I say, where does the sun go at night? You have to answer that for us
at
to
least
continue.
Offer
if,
a guess.
If you can't answer that question, then I don't think we have much to talk about. But I don't know. I need some help, though. So if anybody has any ideas of how to politely and delicately work with the flat earthers, I welcome it. But it was eye opening because of the sheer lack of actually wanting to do any work. That's the main thing, because I said, you know, I will send you solar filters that you can look at the sun yourself. I will send you equipment that you can observe yourself. And there's something about looking up. They don't want to look up.
Well, great. Now people are going to be thinking they can get free solar filters. They just come at us being like, hey, the earth flat as a pancake. Oh, no.
Trust me, I'll be able to tell the real ones from the fake ones. It's pretty easy.
Well, now you have all those documents ready to go for the next time.
Exactly.
Because you know they'll probably be in next time.
Exactly.
I'm ready
to go. I can't wait.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks again to Mark Kushner from NASA for telling us about their citizen science programs. Find more information on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup. And while you're there, take a listen to some of our past episodes.
And we want to hear from you. Do you have a guest or topic idea? Do you or your kids have a space question we can answer? Don't be shy. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're an Apple Podcast user, we'd really appreciate a rating and a comment. Ideally a compliment for me, but whatever you want to comment. That helps others find us. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.